court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Today's episode is kind of a bit different, actually. Usually, whenever we're trying to figure out topics and whatnot, we take some suggestions, like from social media, from the Facebook page or Twitter, something like that. Or sometimes I come up with some legal kind of thing I want to talk about. But today, Tommy came up with this episode idea.
That's true. That usually you're the one that comes up with them so that you can do, because you're the one that has to know stuff. And I just kind of sit here and, you know, I'm somebody for you to talk to. But this one, you know, I heard a story the other day, a news article story, not a nursery rhyme,
a tall tale.
A nursery story, but a story. And it made me think, I'm thinking about, well, you know, we should get a topic that's kind of in the Halloween theme, you know, because it's still, we're going to have Halloween here coming up at the end of this week. So,
yeah,
you know, I thought we need something along those lines. What could it be? And then I heard this story from the news. It really struck me. It said that alien creatures, while they're always depicted as little green men and all these ET and different type of forms like that, They said, actually, this think tank where all these smart people, astrophysicists and everything, they get together and they think, and I guess they get paid for it. I wish somebody would pay me to sit around and think. But anyway, they said that they have come to the determination that when we meet alien life, not if, but when,
yeah,
they will be immortal robots. It will not be a biological life form.
Yeah.
The reason being, space travel is so immense, the time involved, most biological organisms couldn't live to get to where you're going to. So what they will have is most likely it will be AI robots that another species has developed. And, you know, artificial intelligence, and or they may even be so advanced that they will have learned how to put their essence inside a robot.
Right. To live forever.
Right. To live forever like that. So that's what we will encounter as these robots. So I started thinking about that and I thought, man, what if these robots come here and hopefully they don't kill us and they integrate with society? We've got robots living amongst us. What would the laws look like for that? That's what I thought. I wonder if there are laws pertaining to robots. That's what I called you up and said, Michael, I got a topic. Let's do it on robot law.
Yeah,
and I think your response at first was, what?
Robot law? What are you talking about? Well, I just want to go on record first of saying I welcome our new benevolent robot overlords whenever they come. So just remember that, first of all.
It's been forecast. I mean, you've got Black Sabbath with Iron Man, and you had Styx with Domo Arigato, Mr. Roboto.
So, was Iron Man about a robot?
Yeah.
I never really thought about that.
He drills his victims full of lead, running as fast as they can. Iron Man lives again.
I never really... I mean, I've listened to the lyrics, but I never really... What is it? I heard the lyrics, but I didn't really listen to the lyrics.
Well, it was the late 60s, early 70s, so...
Well, yeah, when you suggested robot law, I was thinking, robot law, huh? Yeah, I don't really know much about that.
You not have a specialty in it?
No, it's not one of my practice areas. And I don't know how much my practice area would be, how busy I'd be if I specialized in robot law in Huntington, West Virginia.
Well, maybe not now, but you could be on the cutting edge in what's to come, at least as far as the way my studies go.
I don't know if you happen to look on the Facebook page today, but did you notice which socks I'm wearing today?
I did notice that. You gave that as a little tip of what we were going to do, and some people jumped right to the what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so it must be a very topical topic.
I guess so. They're on people's minds.
Well, the first thing that when I thought of robot law, I immediately jumped to Isaac Asimov, because that's what I'd always heard. And it's funny because we were just kind of briefly talking about what we were going to talk about on this podcast. And I noticed You have that in your notes too.
Absolutely.
So why don't you, since this is your topic, why don't you jump off on that?
Well, it's, you know, it's funny, Isaac Asimov, if you're not familiar with him, he was, most of us know him as a science fiction writer.
Yeah.
He wrote a lot of science fiction stories, but kind of in the same vein as Jules Verne, you know, even though he was an author too, he predicted a lot of things that were to come about in the future that, you know, were really kind of amazing when you look back at it. And so Isaac Asimov, besides being just a science fiction writer, he was actually a big thinker. He'd be one of those ones they'd pay to sit around and think about what's going to happen.
They'd put him in the think tank.
He'd put him in there. And so he developed three laws of robotics, and he actually introduced these in a short story in 1942 called The Runaround, and then they were later reiterated in his iRobot book in 1950. Mm-hmm. But that's how long ago it was that he's thinking about this. Now, the three laws of robots. A robot, number one, a robot must not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah, and the thing that struck me about that when I read it, we're expecting more out of a robot than we expect out of our fellow man.
Yeah.
Because we don't have anything that says, hey, if Mike's getting ready, something's going to happen to him, you must go try to save him and keep him from harm. We don't have anything like that.
No, not even the Ten Commandments. In the Ten Commandments, you have thou shalt not kill.
Yeah, or do unto others.
Yeah, well, do unto others, I guess.
That's not really a commandment, though, is it?
That's the golden rule.
Yeah. Right? That should be right in there, though. Huh?
That's the 11th one. That was the one that got broken off when they dropped it.
But we don't. We don't mandate our fellow man to look out for us. But yet we're saying that as a robot, hey, if I'm in peril, you better save me or you just broke one of the first law.
Right.
All right. Number two, a robot must obey orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Yeah. So if they say, go kill that guy, well, you can't do that. That's against number one.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that bartender rule, isn't it?
What's that?
This bar has two rules. Rule number one, the bartender is always right. Rule number two, in case the bartender is wrong, refer to rule number one.
Right. Or Fight Club.
Yeah.
The first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club.
That's
second
right.
rule of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club.
And then number three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law.
Yeah. I mean, those seem like three pretty solid principles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you know, now if we do have a new benevolent robot overlords that come from a different world. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and say they're benevolent.
Go ahead and go with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
They would have to submit to the jurisdiction of Earth, right? So if they are, in fact, robots, they would have to adhere to these three laws of robotics.
Right. That's exactly right.
So if they pull out their ray gun, getting ready to shoot you, like, whoa, 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 hold on a second here. I'm going to have to refer you to law number one, my metal friend.
That's right. We're right there. We've got them.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where this is going, is that they're saying that, see, these aren't actual laws. I mean, you can't
yet
hold anybody.
I'm going to run for office.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that there is emerging law studies that will specialize in robotics and human beings. Now, the very first person that was ever killed by a robot, we've already had the robot uprising has started. It started in 1979. When Robert Williams, who was a worker at a Ford Motor Company in Flat Rock, Michigan, was killed by an industrial robot arm. He died instantly when he was struck in the head, when he was killed by the arm of a one-ton production line robot as he was gathering parts in a storage facility. His family sued the manufacturers of the robot for a total of $15 million. The court concluded that there were simply not enough safety measures in place to prevent such an accident from happening. He would go down in history as the first recorded human death by robot.
Death by robot.
But now, really what they got sued for is not because of the robot's malevolence, but the lack of safety rules surrounding the use of the robots.
Right. So when I started looking at this issue, because it's not an issue that I ever thought about researching before, but I kind of broke,
you're welcome.
I kind of broke it down into two different areas. One was like kind of robots or production line robots, different basically machines that are programmed to do certain kinds of tasks to help build on an assembly line, you know, just things like that, where basically they have some sort of programming. They're not actually thinking on their own. The second would be some kind of almost emerging technology where we have robots that actually have artificial intelligence and are actually thinking on their own. So that's kind of the two splits I see there as far as legal issues, and that's like a dividing line between them. Because I think as long as you have robots which are programmed and built by people, that you're going to have a theory of negligence against the person who built it or programmed it, or there's going to be other certain safety features that are going to have to be in place, so you're going to have liability that way as well. So, but I think once you get into this artificial intelligence type discussion about it, I think all bets are off. Like it's just a whole different can of worms there.
And that's exactly what they're calling for. There's people that are out there now saying, "Hey, we got to solve this problem."
Well, you know, August 4th, 1997 was kind of a big day too, don't you?
How was that?
That was the day that Skynet became self-aware.
Oh, in the Terminator.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a big day in history too.
Yeah. Well, that day came and went, and Skynet doesn't exist.
Does it?
Does it? Has it taken over the drones?
Well, I don't think so, because on August 19th, 2011, that was the day of when they launched the Skynet launched all the nuclear weapons, and that didn't happen.
That didn't happen.
Yeah.
No, we were there.
Did it?
I think we would have known.
Probably.
I think that would have been kind of loud. We'd have heard the bang.
Yeah. But yeah, the thing I always thought about too about robots is there's, you know, the other issue would be like with drones or something like that. And those are essentially people actually controlling these kinds of machines and robots. I mean, they're not necessarily robots. I guess when you think about robots, you kind of have to define what is a robot and what makes up its robotic essence.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what they're faced with as we go forward, is how do we define what a robot is? One of the answers to that is they say that when we break down defining a robot, it has to be a robot can sense its environment. A robot has a capacity to process the information it senses. And number three, a robot is organized to act directly upon its environment. So in other words, it's saying that it has to be not self-aware, but has to be aware of its environment. Certainly a robotic arm that is being controlled by someone else or is programmed to make a certain movement repetitively, it's not aware of its environment.
No.
It's just acting upon commands that it's been programmed for. So that is what they're saying right now is what they feel a definition of a robot is. Now, these are again, these think tank people that are looking ahead. There's one particular professor that seems to be spearheading a lot of this, because as I researched this topic, his name popped up again and again. His name is Ryan Cato, and he's a law professor at University of Washington.
Okay.
And that's what he's been looking at, and he says that our American laws concerning robotics are woefully short-sighted.
Well, that's probably something who's an expert on robot law would say.
Did you know that there was actually a case precedent involving a robot stealing someone's identity?
I did not know that.
Yes. You know whose identity it was? A famous person. A letter turner.
Vanna White?
You got it.
A robot stole Vanna White's
identity? Well, here's what happened. It's White versus Samsung. The suit of the Wheel of Fortune's Vanna White brought against a South Korean technology company, Samsung, for running an ad featuring a female-shaped robot. White believed this robot, with its blonde wig and hostess-like presentation, violated her right of publicity and falsely implied she endorsed Samsung products. She lost the first trial, but won a Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal. At Ninth Circuit Court, that pops up all the time, doesn't it?
You know, now that you mentioned the facts of that case, I have heard about this case.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The judge ruled that Samsung and its robot violated her individual rights of publicity because it appropriated her likeness.
Yeah.
So they actually won that.
Yeah, but that was, the robot didn't really steal it. It was the people who built the robot and filmed the commercial.
It was the robot on there doing it.
they didn't assert personal jurisdiction over that robot. They asserted over the people who built the robot.
All right, here's one that involved Chuck E. Cheese. As you may or may not know, some states impose an entertainment tax.
Okay.
Where if you have entertainers in your establishment, you have to pay a higher tax rate for this entertainment that you're going on. Well, the state of Maryland tried to impose this higher tax rate against Chuck E. Cheese because of their robotic, you know, dancing animatrons or whatever they have up there. You know, we got the cheap Billy Bob knockoff version, but
Billy Bob's is great.
Well, it's got the same animatronic type things there, right?
Yeah.
But it's no Chuck E. Cheese. Any 5-year old will tell you that.
Didn't Billy Bob's become Chuck E. Cheese here? Or is it still Billy Bob's?
It's still Billy Bob's.
Oh, I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah, it's still the same.
I used to love to go in there and play a gauntlet.
The animatronics are looking sad, though.
Are they?
Yeah, some of them got, like, missing an arm and stuff like that. They just keep wallering along. But they tried to say, the state of Maryland tried to say they had to pay this entertainment tax because of those animatronics. And they finally decided that in order to actually be entertainment, it had to be able to be spontaneous and independent.
Right.
And these performances were not spontaneous and independent and therefore didn't fall under that.
I agree. And that's just silly. That's just somebody taking their job a little too serious, if you ask me. Trying to charge Billy Bob's or Chuck E. Cheese a higher tax because of some dancing robots on their stage.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think they could go after other people and attack poor Chuck E. Cheese?
That's right.
I mean, they're struggling enough, I would think.
Yeah, in this day and age.
Most of those robot things, there was a documentary I saw about a guy that collected all those kind of things.
Really?
Yeah, it was a wild documentary.
I bet. I mean, can you imagine going to somebody's house and he's got like 6 different sets of Chuck E. Cheese robots in his basement?
Mm-hmm. That would be pretty cool, especially if they worked.
Or pretty creepy, possibly, too.
Well, that's true. It could be creepy. Now, some of the things that they say that you've got to think about in this is, like, say that a robot, you were to use a robot to rob somebody's house.
Mm-hmm.
You have a robot go in and steal the stuff, and you could say, look, I was never actually in there. Now, they say you might still have a hard time getting out of that because you put the robot in there and it was under your control, you know, yeah, that you did that for that purpose.
It was an instrumentality of your criminal behavior.
Right. But what if there's a robot already in the house and you hack into it and say you get it to go drop the car keys out the front mail slot or the jewelry from the jewelry box, grab it and drop it out the mail slot to you. You never entered it. You didn't put the robot in there. You just hacked into it and did it. You might be guilty of some kind of cybercrime, but are you guilty of burglary?
Well, that's a good question, because whenever you break down criminal law, essentially you have two parts. You have the mens rea, which I've talked about before, and the actus reus. So basically the mens rea is the mental portion of it, where the intention or knowledge of the wrongdoing that constitutes the crime. And then the actus reus is basically, it's a Latin term, which means it's the act of actually doing it. So in order to, for a lot of these crimes, you have to have both these elements. So if I'm just doing a basic analysis on whether or not, I think if you hack into a vacuum cleaner in somebody's house and get it to suck up some jewels.
Yeah. And spit them out to you.
Spit them back out. you know, I think you definitely have the mental capacity to commit the crime and probably have the physical capacity as well, I would think. And that depends on how the statute's written. Now, under common law, and I've talked about this before, where common law is kind of what you're tested on the bar exam, and it's mm-hmm. actually not actual real laws that exist anywhere. It's just kind of a set of basic common law principles, mm-hmm. which existed in England for the most part. I don't even think they exist in England now anymore either. They've been codified and changed. But anyway, for burglary, under common law, it was breaking the entering dwelling of another at night with the intent to deprive them of property therein, I believe.
Right.
Is what it was. So now if you're looking at a strict common law definition of burglary, no, I would say you're probably not. But it depends on how the statute would be written in each individual state. Now, if it says something kind of like whoever causes the loss of property to someone's dwelling, I'm trying to think how I would word this if I was trying to encompass that. Right. But I mean, if you could, I could envision where there would be language where it'd be broad enough to maybe even encompass that.
But what you're saying is it would vary state to state. And there would be some discrepancies in how, or you might have to interpret whether it's actually covered or not.
True. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, if they hack it doing something else, I'm sure there's some other kind of criminal activity associated with that. It just might not fit that one individual, like, burglary type charge.
Right.
But there would probably be, like, some sort of, I don't know, fraud or, I mean, conspiracy maybe. Are you conspiring with the robot to steal somebody?
Can you conspire with a robot?
I don't know. I've seen there's videos on the internet, I'm sure, of people conspiring with robots.
What other one that I came across on it, and I found this weird. This is way these things work right now. And they're talking about what they need to observe in the future, but it's talking about tariffs. And it says, historically, animate objects are taxed about 20% less than inanimate objects. Here's where it gets weird. Dolls typically have always been considered animate because they represent animate life. But an X-Men figurine is taxed because, and this has already been decided in court, in its hypothetical life of the toy, once it became a mutant, it was no longer a human. So if it's a doll baby, it's considered animate. If it's an X-Man figure, it's considered inanimate.
You mean to tell me some lawyer got paid to litigate this issue?
Yeah.
Man, I am doing the wrong kind of law.
That's what's going on. Now, robots have consistently been considered inanimate. Mm-hmm. But that definition will be, or maybe already is, outdated. Can robotic limbs with their resemblance to human flesh be considered animate? What about robots and supercomputers that run off of biotech fuel from cell proteins and neurons? If the definition of animate is resembling biological life, then robots are there. This has implications beyond something like tariff fees. Being considered animate could directly affect other legal issues, like the capability of being liable for harm. There are few solutions here so far, but researchers from the University of Nevada have an idea. Treat robots like domestic animals. Alive, yet not morally culpable. A robot could be a lot like a dog who can't be put in jail for biting the neighbor.
That's true. And that's that kind of, when I was going down my analysis of this, I was kind of going down that rabbit hole of thinking about when these robots would become more self-aware and possibly making decisions on their own. At what point does the human essentially lose control of the robot itself, and the robot is kind of in charge of its own? And one of those things, and it's kind of an emerging technology, is called reinforcement learning. And that's where basically the AI models or robots or whatever, they're learning from their past experiences. And essentially that reinforcement makes them kind of change and evolve over time. So basically they're no longer essentially what they were programmed to do. They're learning. One interesting thing too, when I was reading this, I watched this show called Westworld. It's on HBO.
Oh yeah.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, I've seen some of it. I haven't, I've heard it's pretty good. I watched a couple episodes early on.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where I didn't record, so I'd missed several of them. And now that I've heard more about it, I think I'm going to go back and catch up on it.
It's a bit of a slow start, too, but it builds up, and it's really good.
I remember the old movie with Yul Brynner.
I didn't realize there was an old movie. It's on YouTube for free.
Yeah, there's an old movie. The old movie was pretty freaky. I remember seeing it at the drive-in theater.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's funny. East Drive-In?
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer there.
It's now HIMG.
It was a Walmart parking lot.
Yeah.
Walmart. So... But yeah, anyway, that was kind of one of the plot lines of that show, was the robots started kind of learning from their past experiences and mm-hmm. was changing things, which was contrary to what they were supposed to be, happened to them in the Westworld, is that they were supposed to have their memories like erased periodically so they wouldn't learn.
Right.
But they changed, well, and essentially they changed their programming so they would learn. So that was one of the things.
And they
about
became
that.
Self-aware.
Yeah, they became self-aware.
They violated the first rule.
They did. But at that point, especially when you watch that show, and the concept is these people can go into Westworld and they can kind of do whatever they want to these robots. I mean, mm-hmm. they can do horrible, depraved things to them.
Right.
They can murder them. They can rape them. They can, bad things. And
you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to degrade a robot.
No, you should not degrade a robot. But it was allowed in Westworld. But you almost started feeling kind of sad for these robots.
Sure.
Because there are these horrible things happening to them. And so it makes you think, like, okay, if we develop these robots that have this artificial intelligence, they become self-aware, do they need to have certain
rights and protections
for them? I mean, I think they probably do.
Well, that makes me think of those poor, you hear about these like robotic sex dolls they have over in Japan or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what if they were to develop where they say no? No means no.
Yeah.
You know? But wait a minute, I bought you for this purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying no. So now what happens? Who stands up for the robot?
It becomes a little bit too self-aware for their enjoyment.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of interesting. Now the other thing too is that when you not only like the protections for the robots, but then protections from people from the robots. So now you say you have this robot who has become self-aware and starts learning and making its own decisions, and it breaks Isaac Asimov's first law of robotics and kills somebody. And then...
Crush, yeah. Kill, destroy.
Must crush Tommy Smurl.
Kill, destroy. That was that bad robot on Lost in Space.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That sounded familiar, but I couldn't quite place it.
It was a bad robot.
Now, but say this robot does something like that where it has to be culpable, whether criminally or civilly as well. Mm-hmm. And who would you turn to sue? Would you sue the robot? I mean, does it have any possessions for you to able to recover any kind of money from?
No, you're not going to do too well civilly.
No. I mean, you would have to sue the person who created the robot, essentially.
But if the person that created it said, hey, look, we didn't program it to do that.
Right.
We programmed it to learn, and it learned some bad things. And those things are already happening, too. I mean, not to the extent where you got random serial killer robots or anything like that, but on a smaller scale, but it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Do you have some examples of the tip of this iceberg?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do.
Well, we're in luck. Iceberg, right ahead.
We have the example of Facebook. Did you hear about what happened with Facebook?
Some people posted some political things, which led to some debate, and people changed their minds about their positions because they were very well thought out.
No, that will never happen.
Okay.
No one will ever change their mind. They will say personal attacks about you, but they will never change their mind. No, Facebook had a situation where they had a couple of robots that they called chatbots that they had set up that they were supposed to talk back and forth. They had taught them language, and they would talk back and forth, and they built them because they wanted to listen to them while they learned how to negotiate by mimicking human trading and bartering. When the social network paired the two programs, they were nicknamed Alice and Bob, to trade against each other, they started to learn their own bizarre form of communication. The chatbot conversation led to divergence from human language as the agents developed their own language for negotiating. But since Facebook's team assigned no reward for conducting the trades in English, the chatbots quickly developed their own terms for the deals. So, I mean, robots react to rewards or not rewards, and so they started shortcutting and basically developing their own shorthand for making the deals. So he said, like, an example would be, like, if I say the word the 5 times, you interpret that to mean I want 5 copies of this item. So this isn't so different from the way committees of humans create shorthands. However, there is nobody that is bilingual in AI and human, you know, English,
yeah,
to be able to go and interpret that. So once they start creating their own language, they can talk about anything and do anything, and we have no way of knowing what they're doing. So they had to shut the two chat box down.
That is pretty scary.
And, you know, those things exist. If you remember that website, Ashley Madison, I think it was?
Yeah.
Remember when that had all those names got published and all that problem? Well, part of the thing that came to light was 90% of the personnel were men, or the members were men. So they didn't have enough women for these guys to talk with, so they had hooked them up with chatbots. Most of the time when you thought you were chatting online with some other female that was interested in an affair, you were actually chatting with a robot that was programmed to respond in certain ways based on what you said. So, I mean, here they were interacting, and who's to know if they were to learn things from that, and not good things either, I wouldn't think.
Well, I doubt the Ashley Madison robots were on the level of...
Of Facebook's?
Yeah, the Facebook
ones. You think Facebook's way ahead of Ashley Madison? I don't know.
I'm just going to give it a hunch there and say yes.
Well, so far, the courts have mostly treated robots as mindless machines, and they have held humans responsible for their actions. But the robots are becoming more capable of acting and thinking for themselves. So, you know, and what's exciting about that is they're finding ways that the robots are figuring out ways to solve problems for us. Mm-hmm. It used to be that, like, treasure hunting in sunken ships, you had to physically go down and lay human hands on the cargo in a sunken ship to claim ownership of it.
Yeah.
Now they said you can send a submersible down there, an automatic submersible. If your submersible is the first one there to start gathering this, you can use that. It's an extension of a human.
Well, I mean, that's again, as we talked about before on the show, that's a development in the law of technology. Because now, as we're able to explore depths where human hands can't actually lay their hands on these things, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to have that kind of that kind of law.
So. Right. And that actually helped in reclaiming the Titanic. Then there's outer space. In November of 2015, President Obama signed a bill that would allow exploration by private companies, including ones interested in mining asteroids for minerals. And that mining would certainly be done by robots.
Or Bruce Willis.
Well, yes.
Okay.
With the guy from The Green Mile.
Yep. He passed away though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Man, he was a big old dude too.
He was. He was into jiu-jitsu as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
I did not know that. But it says if we truly want an emergency system, it's not clear that all the kinds of mischief that the robots may get into can be anticipated. An incident last year hints at the kinds of cases that would come up. Police in Amsterdam investigated a web developer named Jeffrey Vandergoot, who created a Twitter bot, and it apparently tweeted a death threat at a local fashion show. The bot was an algorithm that remixed random phrases from Vandergoot's personal Twitter account. Vandergoot insisted he hadn't meant to threaten anyone and hadn't anticipated that the bot would do so. No charges were filed, but he had to disable the robot at the request of the cops.
That seems pretty reasonable to me. Make you a deal here. We're going to buy your story, but just shut it down.
Yeah, shut it down. No more. And they say that the issue of anticipating what AI can do would also make it tricky to determine liability in civil cases. And they cite a classic law school case involving a mink farmer who sued a nearby mill company, claiming that the company's use of explosives to clear a roadway had stressed its minks so badly that they'd eaten their young.
Yeah, I remember that case.
Did you say that in law school?
Yep, I believe so.
And the court ruled that the stressed out minks are beyond the foreseeable consequences of blasting and denied the claim for damages.
Yeah.
So they're saying as artificial intelligence and robotics advance, foreseeable consequences may be a moving target. If we have truly an emergent system, it's not clear that all the kinds of mischief that may happen can be anticipated.
Well, and that's the whole main issue of a negligence cause of action is foreseeability. Now, if you do something and it's just not possible, it's not foreseeable that might be a consequence of it, then yeah, negligence is not going to lie there. You're not going to have that.
Well, you have your known unknowns and then you have your unknown unknowns.
Sure. I like that. One thing that I kept coming back to when I was thinking about this issue with robots is seems to be something that's happening now is driverless cars and
exactly
robots or AI controlling that. I mean, I don't really know how any of these things work, how the Google cars or whatever drive.
I don't even know how the internet works.
It's a series of pipes that connect the computers. But it's if somebody has cruise control on their vehicle, and the cruise control malfunctions and causes an accident, the case law is pretty clear that that's actually the person who's driving the car. It's their responsibility to make sure they maintain control of it.
Right.
Now, there may be a subsequent product's liability against the person who manufactured it if there's some sort of malfunction with the cruise control. But ultimately, the person who's driving is responsible for it. So I think that might be kind of the same theory would apply if you're in a driverless car. It's almost essentially like a real cruise control, that you still have a duty or a responsibility to make sure the vehicle is maintained in a safe condition. Now, I don't know, how that plays into being, but if you fall asleep in your car and the car's driving, I don't know.
Well, are you talking about a driverless car?
Yeah, I'm talking about a driverless car.
Well, you should be able to fall asleep and it shouldn't matter.
Right. But so what happens if it wrecks, if it goes off and kills somebody? Well, who's liable?
I don't know. I mean, the car?
The car?
somewhere at this point, I guess we're saying the system failed.
Right.
So I think that's why you're not seeing them out in too much practice, because nobody has reached a point where they're completely sure about the system. However, they also have the argument that when these systems are working, that they feel like that they're going to be, even if you still have wrecks as a result, there's going to be a whole lot less than humans, because humans are more likely to be impaired or tired or not paying attention or distracted by the phone or kids or something like that, or just make a bad decision and pull out in front of somebody. So even the early levels of this unmanned driving is probably going to be better than what we have right now with humans doing it.
Oh, I agree. And I, for one, want to go on record as saying I welcome our benevolent robot drivers.
It'd be like in what are the flying taxis in
Jetsons?
No, I was thinking of not the Fifth Dimension.
Oh, the Fifth Element?
The Fifth Element, yeah. 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 That Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
That one, they popped out of the taxi. That robot guy, and he turns around, he's got that dummy head. Where are we going?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's what that reminded me of. But as robots are beginning to spread from industrial environments in the real world, human safety in the presence of robots has become an important social and technological issue. Now, this is other countries are way ahead of the curve on this compared to us, where America has really dragged their feet on this issue. Currently, countries like Japan and South Korea are preparing for the human-robot coexistence society, which is predicted to emerge before 2030. South Korea predicts that every home in its country will include a robot by 2020.
Wow.
Now, 2020 is not very far away.
No.
And they're saying there's going to be a robot. Now, there again, we get back to the definition of robot.
Yeah.
Like, is Alexa a robot?
Right.
I mean, I don't think that would qualify, because all that is just a different way to interface with the computer as opposed to a keyboard. You're using a audio recognition system.
Right. But think about it like this. When you fill out your Google search terms, I mean, it's auto-filling things based in on what it thinks you're going to be typing in there. I mean, it's kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And I think Alexa probably does something similar to that.
So well, that's probably true.
I think you're right. I don't think you're there yet, but I think you're getting close.
But that's kind of creepy. They're going to have a robot in every house by 2020. Now, if they're Alexas, okay, maybe so. People have that. Or those Roombas that go around vacuuming and stuff like that. But I don't know. When I think about robots, I think of them walking around like Rosie on the Jetsons.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like that, or the robot on Lost in Space. Run, Will Robinson. Run, Will Robinson.
I was about to say, hey, Mr. J. But I think I was mixing up Harley Quinn and Rosie from the Jetsons. Oh. I don't think she said that. I think it was Mr. Jet. Hey, Mr. Jetson. Well, you know, I think maybe why we're so far behind in robot laws here in America is because we're more concerned about trying to excise higher tariffs on Chuck E. Cheese robots than actually thinking about the future.
Well, that's true. And they need to look at them blending in. They said a guiding principle of the proposed framework is categorizing robots as third existence entities. Next generation robots are considered to be neither living/biological, which is first existence, or non-living/non-biological, which is second existence.
Right.
Therefore, a third existence entity will resemble living things in appearance and behavior, but will not be self-aware. While robots are currently legally classified as second existence human property, the authors believe that a third existence classification would simplify dealing with accidents in terms of responsibility distribution. Now, one of the things that I really thought was interesting is here we're talking about part of it has to do with how robots, integrating robots into human society, dealing with open texture risk occurring from unpredictable interactions in unstructured environments, and they're blaming it on language. While every word in natural language has a core definition, the open texture character of language allows for interpretations that vary due to outside factors. So as part of their safety intelligence concept, the authors have proposed a legal machine language in which ethics are embedded into robots through code, which is designed to resolve issues associated with open texture risk, something that Asimov's three laws cannot specifically address. So in other words, they're saying, if I say a sentence to you, depending on the words in it, there may be ambiguity.
Yep.
Or the same word that means several different things.
Right.
Like if I say go to store, am I talking about storing data or am I talking about the store as far as a building?
Right.
You know, things like that. So it's saying because of that risk and that open texture language, that there's too much of a chance, a risk of something going wrong because the robot interprets something wrong.
And that's one of the things, as far as being a lawyer, that I do on a daily basis with regard to spoken language and ambiguity. I either want to make sure that there is no ambiguity in what I'm saying to really lock it down, or conversely, I want to make sure there is ambiguity in what I'm saying so I can wiggle around it a little bit.
What they're saying is they don't want any when it comes to robots.
So there's not going to be any robot lawyers, probably.
Well, that's funny. That's this next paragraph. That's what they talk about. It said the legal machine language framework stands on legal and engineering perspectives of safety issues, which we face in the near future by combining these two basic ideas, code is law and embedded ethics. In this framework, the safety issues are not only based on the autonomous intelligence of robots, but the safety issues are divided into different levels with individual properties and approaches, such as the embedded safety intelligence of robots. It says, by preventing robots from understanding human language, legal machine language could help maintain a distance between humans and robots in general. If robots could interpret human legal language exactly someday, should we consider giving them a legal status and rights?
Yeah.
Should the human legal system change into a human-robot legal system? There might be a robot lawyer, a robot judge working with a human lawyer, or a human judge to deal with the lawsuits happening with inner human-robot disputes. Robots might learn the kindness of humans, but they may also learn the deceit, hypocrisy, and greed of humans, which would be a bad thing.
They have like special robot courts for just for robot issues.
Yeah, and part of them would be made up from robots.
Huh. Well, in most of the research I've done, like I think we're kind of talking a little bit about down the road, looking to what might be in the future. But most of the robot cases I've looked at now, and you know, trying to prepare for this episode, they seem to be more along the lines of products liability type issues, or also negligence issues. Much like the case where the first guy got smashed by the robot arm while working at the
Ford plant.
Yeah, the Ford plant. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a bunch of cases out there, and most of them seem to be, as far as the whole robot thing in the automotive world with these assembly plants, where you have a lot of robotic arms and things like that making things, and you have human interaction with them, and people getting smashed essentially by these things or compressed. Mm-hmm. One of the things that is big in these kinds of cases is the safety measures that they have in place, whereas there's supposed to be some sort of sensors so that basically when people are around them, that these things don't continue to move.
Exactly.
Like almost like a fail safe. Like mm-hmm. when a human is within the zone of danger, they shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially if those are not in place, then there's negligence obviously against the company that is running those. Or alternatively, if they fail, then it's whoever designed the fail safes would be liable as well. And again, that's kind of the state of where we are with robot law now, as far as like negligence and things like that goes. Now, like we started talking about a little bit, the next step is what we were talking about with regards to if the robot is thinking on its own and there's no one else that's liable for it, the robot's making its own decisions, who do you go after then?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's part of what they're looking at.
Yeah. And I think the other thought too is like, okay, so if you go after these robots for, you know, the damages they cause, they don't own property. So again, we're talking about, should they own property? Can a robot have its own little robot house? And if they do damage to you, can you sue them and take their little robot house?
Maybe you just get to take the robot.
That's true. But
there's intrinsic value in the robot.
There is. But
if it's a killer robot.
That's right. But if they have rights as well, and they are able to own property, then
right.
You know, we're getting closer to this whole weird mm-hmm. Kind of almost slavery type issue. Type thing.
That's true.
So, especially, yeah. I mean, if they're thinking, feeling, autonomous beings, then, you know, where do you draw the line?
Well, that's what you get. That's why they got all those smart peoples. I came across where, you know, Harvard is a place where a lot of smart people go.
This is true.
And they have the Harvard Law School and Emerging Robotics and Automation Technologies Group. They were holding a seminar in 2016 so that they could discuss the social robots existing and operating in the ordinary social world. This says the diffusion of robotic machines with AI capabilities enabling highly automated, even autonomous behaviors inevitably raises important normative questions of law, regulation, and ethics of such machines in their interactions with people and the human social world. Some of these questions are already on the table today, such as liability with self-driving cars, while others will arise in the future as the robots develop. So this was another one of those think tank type things. All those smart people are trying to get all the people involved at the Berkman Klein Center at Harvard University to talk about robotics in the future.
Got a plan for the future.
That's right. And they had Isaac Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics. There's a group that the Engineering and Physical Sciences Research Council that has basically expounded on his three laws.
Also, have more?
Yeah, well, they kind of updated them to make them more specific to today's society. So they have five of them. They expounded the three to five, and then they have seven messages that go along with it. So I don't know how you interpret the difference. But anyway, number one, robots should not be designed solely or primarily to kill or harm humans. So I guess that's kind of, it's kind of like number one.
Right.
But it's a little bit different. I think they're thinking about people that would develop robots to go to war or something like that.
Right.
You know, that you that should never be anything that anybody would engage in. Humans, not robots, are responsible agents. Robots are tools designed to achieve human goals. Number three, robots should be designed in ways that assure their safety and security. Number four, robots are artifacts. They should not be designed to exploit vulnerable users by evoking an emotional response or dependency. It should always be possible to tell a robot from a human. How about that for thinking? Number five, it should always be possible to find out who is legally responsible for a robot.
Yeah.
So has it got like a serial number or something, I guess. I don't
exactly.
Know.
That goes back to my whole theory of liability.
And it says, and then the messages, one, we believe robots have the potential to provide immense positive impact to society. We want to encourage responsible robot research. Two, bad practice hurts us all. Three, addressing obvious public concerns will make us all make progress. Four, it is important to demonstrate that we, as roboticists, are committed to the best possible standards of practice. Five, to understand the context and consequences of our research, we should work with experts from other disciplines, including social sciences, law, philosophy, and the arts. Six, we should consider the ethics of transparency. Are there limits to what should be openly available? And seven, when we see erroneous accounts in the press, we commit to take the time to contact reporting journalists. Well, I hope nobody contacts us.
Well, we're not really journalists.
Well, we're broadcast journalists.
I'm a podcaster.
Podcast journalist.
There you go. I don't know. I just don't think I'm a journalist.
And did you know Virginia is the first state to pass a law allowing robots to deliver straight to your door?
I did not know that.
They did. They said the robot cannot weigh more than 50 pounds and cannot go more than 10 miles an hour.
That seems fair.
And they're using it. There's several cities where they're trying to use it, but they did say that the Virginia municipalities can forbid them if they want.
Yeah.
Or change the restrictions.
Well, I know
on the
Amazon
speed.
Was going to be having drones deliver things to people's houses.
Well, I don't understand these robots running around on the ground delivering things. Why wouldn't somebody just pick it up and claim the robot as their own?
Serial numbers?
Well, I know, but still, I mean,
death rays.
Well, I mean, you could if you armed it, I guess. And I did read a story where they actually used a robot to kill a human. So it violated the first law. The police used it. They used one of their detonation robots. You know how they have those robots that go in to detonate bombs?
Right.
They won't say how they did it exactly, but they had it rigged with an explosive and sent it in a standoff situation. Basically blew the robot up and blew the guy up.
I'm sure somebody was controlling it, though.
Well, yeah, I know, but still, the robot killed him.
Well, I mean, how's that different than the drone strikes?
Well, it's not.
Yeah, it's the same thing. You got drone pilots that do that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those are kind of like robots. But, I mean, again, we're not to that next generation of robots. These are all human-controlled type things.
But I thought it was kind of funny. The people, the manufacturer of the robot, they kind of came out and called that police department out, and they said, that's not what we make this for.
Right.
We make this to save police lives in bomb scare situations, not to go blow people up.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, you did save officers' lives. It was going to endanger people if we had continued this standoff or had to try to take him through force.
So here's what we did. We duct taped an AK-47 to it and drove it in there.
Yeah.
We modified your robot.
Yeah, they won't say what they did, but it went in there and neither one of them were left. But those robots were, they said, were about $100,000 a piece. So that was a pretty expensive takeout.
I'd say so. They must have had one of those Patriot Act grants.
I guess.
Well, I think that's going to do it for our robot episode.
I was excited about this one, Mike.
I can tell.
I thought it was neat. I probably got carried away on my research because it was just so much out there. But
well, I fed into your excitement, too. I wore my robot socks today.
I didn't have any robot socks.
You got to have robot socks.
I didn't. I'm about to get some.
But that's going to bring us to Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we go over different terms we talked about and kind of reinforce the principles. So I don't know. Do you have legal briefs for me today since this was kind of your topic, or am I the legal briefer?
Well, you're the legal soccer.
What? Oh, because I'm wearing robot socks?
Yeah, not briefs.
Oh. What?
Legal briefs? Legal socks?
If I was wearing robot underwear, would it be?
Legal briefs.
Oh, okay.
It would actually be robot briefs.
Well, I got one to start us off.
All right.
And this goes back to our criminal law episode. And there's two Latin terms for when somebody commits a crime. They have to do with two different principles. You remember what those were?
Mens rea.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is like active rea or something.
Actus
like
reus.
Actus reus.
Yep. And do you know what those stand for?
The mental capacity and the physical capacity.
Well, yeah. The mental knowledge of the wrongdoing and then also the physical act. So those are the two things. But yeah, that's it.
Well, what do you know about that?
Yeah.
All right. How about this? What country says that there's going to be robots in every household in their country by 2020?
South Korea.
You're right. You've earned an all-expenses-paid trip to South Korea. Oh, no, wait a minute. It's just north of the border. You're going to North Korea.
I don't think they'd let me in. And I'd be scared if they let me in, they wouldn't let me out.
Just tell them Dennis Rodman sent you.
The worm.
Yeah, they'll let you in if you're friends with him.
He went off the deep end, didn't he?
Oh, no. He runs around with Kim Jong-un because he's on the up and up because he's just completely coherent. All right. What's the number one law of robots as put forth by Isaac Asimov?
A robot may not injure a human being or, through interaction, allow a human being to come to harm.
Wrong.
What?
You said interaction. It's inaction.
No, I misread it because it's in my notes too.
Quit reading your notes. That's not fair. I never get to read my notes.
Well, if I have something in my notes, it's what you're asking me. It's only fair.
And you still got it wrong.
Well,
that's minus two for missing it when you had it right in front of you.
Well, we'll have to edit that later.
You've been inaction. I think that's pretty bad, though, that we expect more out of robots than we expect out of each other.
Well, I don't know. I think it's probably a good thing. Going forward, you know.
That's about par for the course, though, isn't it?
So now I said that right now, most of the robot law issues with regards to any kind of civil liability are handled in two different areas of law. And do you remember what those were? And these are basically like the manufacturing type accidents that happen at different automotive plants and things like that.
You mean like civil law?
Yeah.
They're usually in civil law or...
What kind of lawsuits do people file? Where they the subclass?
Oh, injuries?
Right.
Or in negligence?
Right, but there's one other one.
Robot divisiveness.
Products liability.
Products liability.
Yeah. That is the person who manufactures it.
Oh.
Now, whether it's their software or some sort of physical thing that fails, but it's basically a products liability. So whoever manufactures the robot. Or negligence, if basically that it was foreseeable this accident could happen and they didn't take the right steps to make sure it didn't happen. So those are the two main areas of law that are you see these kinds of cases right now.
And that's the thing that continues to change, which will challenge law. The foreseeability.
Yeah.
Because it, as we move forward, it's no telling what might happen.
That's right.
But when our robot overlords arrive and we're all running around and they're drilling their victims full of lead, I mean, all we can say is bow down and say, domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. I can't say that.
Thanks to everybody for listening. And thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I am...